All right, everybody, welcome to our podcast. This is the Birmingham Rental Investor, and I am one of your hosts, Spencer Sutton. I've got Matthew Whitaker with me, and also our special guest today is Brian Miles. So we're pumped to have you, Brian. So say hey to everybody.
Well, thanks. Hey, everybody.
All three of us have known each other a long time, so we thought our first guest, it would make a lot of sense for Brian to be on. And super excited that you're here, Brian.
Yeah, me too. Glad to be here.
This is great. I mean, I love this because Brian was really the very first investor in Birmingham that I got to know pretty well. Like, and when I say investor, like he was the first one that had been doing it for longer than I had. And so I think, Brian, maybe we even competed on a house against each other? Like you were trying to buy a house, I was trying to buy this house. Is that the way you remember it?
No, I remember where we met you and Roland at a house in Roebuck that I went to look at to purchase from the two of you.
Oh, from and, us. That's right. That's right.
Yeah, it was a circle off of Annie Laura. I just, you know, I remember that. But yeah, that's where I met the two of you. Was at that house.
Yes. I think I went and looked at that house too. And I think Brian beat me on that house. And then we all three met on the famous Cherry Avenue house, right?
Cherry Avenue. I think I walked in it before you did. And I was sorry that I did.
Yep. had a few fleas on it. I was glad that you went and cleared out all the fleas for me before I went in.
Yeah.
He got a majority of them on his legs. So I do remember these very early days. Brian eventually came and started working with me and Roland and buying houses for us. So we would send Brian out to look at houses. He knew Birmingham like the back of his hand. He had already bought and held rental properties. Like he was the expert that we needed because at that point, Roland and I really were not experts. And so our relationship grew. Then, of course, you know, Matthew got to know Brian over the course of just joining the Homevestor franchise. And then eventually, what year was it, Brian, that you kind of went out on your own? You bought with some partners a Homevestor franchise. Was that around 2006?
Five, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
The latter part of 2005. And then we saw a market shift in 2007.
So you had a good year. You had about a good year, year and a half.
Yeah, had a good year. That's right.
Yeah, Matthew and I had a little bit of a head start on you as far as the good times. But anyway, we're excited to have you here because, again, we still look at you as an industry expert. You are still out there buying, selling rental property, wholesaling houses, flipping houses. Brian does it all or has done it all. And so that's why we're excited to have you on this podcast.
Yeah, Brian, do you have any idea how many homes you've bought and sold in your career?
I don't know. You know, we got back into selling, purchasing and selling in 2014. I think it was December of 2014. And since 2014, probably have done around 25 to 30 per year, roughly. Right. Did 39 last year, 2019.
Wow. And so in your career, though, because you worked for a group prior to working with Spencer, and then you worked with Spencer, and then you had your own Homevestors franchise, and then you had your own second Homevestors franchise, which we're partners on, just for disclosure's sake. But, I mean, are we talking 500-plus homes?
Yeah, I would say probably something like 500. And, you know, if you think about the GK Houses days, the beginning of it, you know, we had the privilege of going out and buying houses for an investment bank. You know, that was a lot of fun.
So the point is that Brian knows his stuff for Birmingham. I wanted to establish credibility. This guy knows. I always tell everybody when I'm explaining Brian, you can tell him the street and then you can describe the house and he'll know which house you're talking about. That's how good Brian is with Birmingham.
As a matter of fact, I did that recently, actually. I called Brian about a house a Roofstock investor had called me about, and we were talking about it. And I said, let me talk to somebody who's going to know a little bit more about this area. So I talked to Brian about it. I called him and he was like, oh, I know the house. It's on the corner there in Eastlake. And the thing you have to watch out about that house, it's a beautiful house, but it's surrounded by apartment complexes. That's something I didn't know. The investor didn't know. And so I thought it was very, very good information that I was able to pass on. So tons of credibility for Brian Miles.
So Brian, let's get in. Let's start talking about your strategy. What are you doing today? Like, what is your current strategy for buying homes, selling homes? Are you wholesaling a lot of homes? Just kind of give us an update on what you're doing right now.
Doing a little bit of turnkey. We've got five or six houses that are in some process of being turnkey. They're being worked on or they're on the market to sell. We've got three flips going on at this time. Eastlake is a beautiful story today. And it's amazing what's going on in that 35206 zip code. And then we're in Trustville and we're in Moody. Is where we have our flips right now. So, and I'm going to look at an apartment complex today, and we would go in, fix up the apartment complex, and put what's referred to as VASH certificates in that, which is our veterans. That's what would take place with this complex.
Very cool. And, so you're doing a lot of different things.
Yeah. Very little, if any, wholesaling right now. I had a phone call with Spencer the other day, and last Monday, a week ago Monday, backed out of the first contract I've ever backed out of with what's going on today in our world. And I just got antsy, got scared. Now, I was able to put that seller in touch with a wholesaler that did buy the property that same week, which I was glad of that. So,
what areas of Birmingham, you mentioned the 35206 zip code, that's Eastlake. What areas do you think right now are kind of hot from a rental investor standpoint?
35206, I would buy every house in the south part of 35206 if I could.
I was about to say, it's not all turned around yet. I mean, you've kind of got to know your streets, don't you?
Oh, listen, and this is the infant stages. We have two going on 9th Avenue South in Eastlake right now, three doors down from each other. One of them is being sold as a flip, and we got a call the other day from an agent who found out about it and took her potential buyers out there to look at it, $11,000 more than what we were going to ask for it. They sent us a contract on it. So it's amazing to see what's going on in Southeast Lake. It's in the infant stages.
Yeah, that kind of butts up against Ruffner Mountain Road. And by you saying infant stages, you need to know what street you're buying on before you do it, right?
Yeah. So for instance, this particular house, a great section of East Lake, two doors down, though, is a Section 8 tenant. Two doors the other way is a house that we're actually trying to buy it because it's about to fall down. So it's in the infant stages.
A lot of opportunity. You just need to know what you're doing. Yeah.
Right. So where else besides 35206 are you seeing great places to buy?
Rental property, the Pleasant Grove, the Hueytown, you know, I'd buy every one of them if I could. We still like Center Point, where what we may have paid for a Center Point house 6 months to a year ago, I would not even consider paying today. Looking at Center Point, somewhere around $10,000 to $15,000 less is what I would pay today.
And just explain to everybody why you say that. Why has Center Point come down?
Well, you know, I don't know. They obviously have changed their building code. The last one we did in Centerpoint, the book showed us walking away with making about $1,500. But if you put our time into it, you know, we didn't make a dime. And it's due to the inspectors coming in. Multiple times the inspectors came in telling us to change things where, you know, they shouldn't do that. They ought to come in one time. This is what you need to do. And then they ought to come back to make sure you did what they told you to do the first time, but they're not doing that.
So this is something new that they've started to do, right? So this
is probably within the last year. Well, we've seen some investors pull out of Center Point, but not all. I mean, there's still some in there that, you know, are buying as many today as they were 6 months to a year ago.
And this is obviously affecting the rental investor as well. I think you were talking about, especially on the renovation side, multiple inspections. Center Point's also instituted a certificate of occupancy and an annual inspection. So it's creating a lot of friction when you try to rent a house because there's a lot of hoops that they're creating that you have to jump through before you can rent.
Well, I was just going to say, but also in that area, right? So if you pay attention to where you're looking around the center point area, there's still some things that are not in the center point, in the city of Center Point, that are great houses like Clay Chalkville area, Roebuck area,
Pinson.
Yeah,
we just sold one. Literally, you turn off of Center Point Parkway and drive up the road. Left-hand side of the Center Point, right-hand side was county. And we bought on the right-hand side. And they went to Pinson Schools, which is a better school
system. Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a very easy sale.
One of the things I don't want to do is we jumped off of Pleasant Grove and Hueytown. Let's go back to those areas. They're on the western side of town, essentially the opposite side of Birmingham from...
Yeah.
Center Point.
Right.
These areas are a little out. Houses are a little bit further apart.
There's not as many of them.
They're their own municipalities, so they have their own school system and great areas for investors, right? Because there's a lot of retail type opportunities there. So if you're a rental investor, this is a place where you could possibly get some appreciation, I would say.
Absolutely.
On top of your monthly cash flow. If you're a rental investor, are you able to buy cash flowing properties in Pleasant Grove, Hueytown?
Yes, you can, but nothing like if you're going into your areas of like what we call true West End, Inslee, your return's not going to be as great.
But cash flow is going to be better.
Better area, normally a better house.
Yeah. Gotcha. Less risk.
That's a good way.
How's the inventory? Like how easy is it for an investor to find a house in Hueytown and Pleasant Grove?
It's not.
Yeah,
it's not. I would tell you most everything in those two areas right now, for the most part, are now being retail. They're flips.
What is the retail price of the homes in the Hueytown, Pleasant Grove area?
You know, Hueytown's probably somewhere around the 150s or so, roughly. Pleasant Grove, I mean, they're more than that. You know, you're seeing 170, 200, right around there. Man, you know, Pleasant Grove has some absolutely wonderful houses.
And so if you were, let's zoom back out on all of Birmingham. If you were, let's say you had money to invest and you could buy 5 to 10 houses and you knew you could only buy 5 to 10 houses over the next year or so, where would you focus your efforts in Birmingham?
I would look into the Roebuck Huffman area.
Just south of Center Point.
South Center Point, city limits of Birmingham. Really like those two areas. Of course, I'll go to Hueytown. And again, I think you kind of have to look at what do you want your return to be on these properties? We're seeing houses in the Inslee area, the 35208 zip code. Some of those houses are selling in the 150 to 200s. We're seeing some selling over 200. Now, that's over off of Bush Boulevard, which are really... You know, just a beautiful street. But
which is kind of West Birmingham.
Still West Birmingham, that's correct. And then, of course, I'll always go to Adamsville and Forestdale.
Yeah.
Just, I love those two parts of the city. You know, again, I don't buy much in those two areas. I just can't find them.
Yeah.
What do you think about what we're starting to see from like Roofstock and different people are, they're starting to go south of the city. We're seeing a lot more Calera, Alabaster, Helena type
Chelsea
houses. Chelsea houses. What are your thoughts? I mean, are you seeing a lot of activity down that way?
When I look at that, I look at it as being safe, just safe in regards to, you know, obviously most of that property down there is they're homeowners. Your rents are phenomenal. However, you're paying for that house. And they're newer homes, the majority of them. If I have the funds and I could do something like that, I'd be willing to take less of a return on my money. And yes, there's no doubt I would go that way.
Yeah, definitely. Those newer homes, I mean, the new word is vintage. Those newer vintage homes are definitely a place where you can have less repairs. I mean, homes that were built in the 2010s are going to obviously have less repairs than homes that we're buying in the that are built in the 50s and 60s. And most areas we talked about thus far have been homes built in the 50s and 60s. And the reason people do that is because of the modern amenities. They were set up for central heating and air. The homes are very efficient. They have closets and they're more of a traditional kind of layout of a home. Whereas some of the homes that were built prior to that, earlier in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, have really high ceilings in Birmingham. So you just got to watch out for things like that when you're looking to buy homes. Obviously, homes that are built in 2010 are built for the modern day person that's going to be living in them.
Yeah.
That kind of gets me to a question. What are some mistakes that you see people making buying homes when they're just getting started here in Birmingham?
When I talk to, which is probably a couple of times a month, I will talk to an investor. I try to do my best to get them to come to the city. I just think they need to know where they're buying and see not only the street they're buying on, but also look at the surrounding area. You know, if you're willing to take on a lower income area, that's all well and good, but look at what you're getting.
Yeah, don't just look at the numbers. Come physically see what you're buying, right? If you're buying something for $85,000 and you don't physically come lay eyes on that, it seems like that doesn't seem like a really wise idea. Especially,
but that happens.
Yeah.
It happens all the time.
Every day it happens.
Yeah. And once you get more comfortable with understanding Birmingham, you may buy that on your 10th house. You may not have to lay eyes on it because you kind of know in general what it's going to look like. And you know, yeah, in general the area, or you've been there before. But certainly if you're buying your first few deals, it's worth spending the money to fly down here and come spend some time with whoever your agent or whoever is helping you buy these homes. And also picking their brain. I mean, you don't have to come in and stay long, but I always suggest people fly in, maybe eat lunch, fly in the morning, eat lunch with somebody, spend the afternoon, maybe go to dinner, and then spend the morning and fly out the next day after lunch. And that is plenty of time to see Birmingham. Birmingham is not a really huge city. It's only about 1 million people. You can get from one side of it to the other in 15 or 20 minutes. For you to just spend a day here, you will get to see a lot, and it'll help you kind of conceptualize what's going on in the Birmingham area. And one of the things I think is that people will be really pleasantly surprised when they come here how nice it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agree.
So what else? Any other mistakes you're seeing investors make when they're buying in Birmingham, Brian?
No, not yet. You know, I'm really not. You know, we, the ones that we're selling, you know, for the most part, most of your turnkey providers, if not all of them, are basically giving you as new a house as they can possibly give you. And yes, you know, granted, as Matthew said, it's still a 1950s house that's going to have issues. But if I see anything taking place, and I had a conversation about this yesterday with someone that they bought in North Birmingham, and it's just turned into a mess. And before he bought that, it's a small apartment complex, I told him, I said, man, come see what you're buying. But he chose not to do that. You know, North Birmingham, I don't see it moving as quickly as some of the other areas right now, improving, I should say.
Right.
So North Birmingham, let's talk about where that area is. It is just north of the city, right? So if you look at the city on a map, you're going to see where all the interstates basically cross. And you're talking about essentially just north of where the Civic Center is, right?
Yep. However, you know, we've got the new stadium going in. And I mean, it has really kind of turned into an area where even the lots are selling. You know, people are trying to do their best to get the hands on the lots and all that.
Is that mainly in Norwood? Like the Norwood?
Well, no, that's not Norwood, even though I would consider Norwood North Birmingham. You know, one group has come into the Norwood area, mainly one group, and it's amazing what they've done with these houses and what these houses are selling for.
Thought I'd never see the day.
I think will change even more so, more quickly than even like the East Lake area and that.
Interesting. So let's talk about that for a second. One of the things I think is important is to understand what Brian said about the stadium. So the city is building UAB, University of Alabama at Birmingham, a new football stadium that's also going to be used for things like soccer and concerts and just events. And they're building it right next to where Topgolf is, right next to the Civic Center. So they're trying to build a kind of city center, what they're calling Uptown. And so what people are doing is they're investing around that area, thinking that area is going to be a hot spot for places, probably some commercial stuff that's going to support that that new stadium.
And also need to remember the old Caraway Hospital. That, my understanding, has been bought and will be a multi-use facility at some point in time.
Well, that's exciting news, because that Caraway Hospital in North Birmingham has been sitting there for a long time.
And it's an eyesore.
It is absolutely an eyesore.
Yeah.
So really good things are happening in Birmingham. I would say the mayor, Mayor Woodfin's done a pretty good job of kind of injecting some energy into Birmingham. And there's a lot going on.
And so right across from the old Caraway Hospital, just north of downtown, is Norwood. Big, beautiful, old, stately homes that kind of went into disrepair for a while. But we have seen people coming in there. And all of those homes are actually selling on the retail market. To the best of my knowledge, there's no rentals that people are going in there and purchasing for rentals.
This could be a really cool area if they fix all these houses up. Original kind of 1900s probably to 1920s and 30s. Yeah. And you're talking about some really cool stuff. Very hopeful that that comes back.
But again, for a rental investor in that area with those big, the house built in 1900, 1920, you're talking tall ceilings.
12-foot ceilings.
Yeah, 12-foot ceilings. When you stick a tenant in there and they heat that whole place, it just gets so expensive, like too expensive, really.
Yeah, and you think about that 8-foot ceiling from that 12-foot ceiling, you've got 4 more feet of walls to paint. And, you know, it's just more expensive.
And heat and cool.
Yeah, heat and cool, paint, everything.
Yeah, yeah, Brian, no doubt.
Brian, talk a little bit about what you know, just thinking through like resident, who's living in the homes that we manage. You know, what is driving that? I know UABs, we have a lot of people that, you know, you forget when you think hospitals, you think doctors and nurses, but one of the things people don't think of is all the support staff that go into running a hospital the size of UAB. What are some other industries that you're seeing a lot of our residents working in that live in homes that you own or you managed?
So one of the areas that I've really been looking in is over around the new Amazon warehouse. You know, I don't know how many people they plan on employing over there, but I think you'll see that area turn around a little bit. It's over in Bessemer, Alabama is where it's located.
Yeah, so this is on the western side of town. Bessemer is a different city west of Birmingham, and you're talking about southwest of town on the way to Tuscaloosa. They're building a big Amazon facility, and they're going to employ a bunch of people down there.
Yeah.
So Hueytown, Pleasant Grove is very close to where this is going to
happen. Oh, yeah. And I just think on the retail market, you'll definitely see that pick up over in that area for sure. No doubt about it.
Well, and then it also is very close to the Mercedes-Benz manufacturing facility, too, that makes the M-Class Mercedes. Mercedes is about halfway between Birmingham and Tuscaloosa. They manufacture the M-Class. That employs a ton of people. The facility is ginormous. So that's another industry driver. And then we also have Honda on the eastern side of town that is a manufacturer of the Honda Odyssey van. So a lot of really good things, especially from a rental investor standpoint, going on in the Birmingham area.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things, and this goes back to the western side, that we have spent some time looking in are some of the counties that surround Jefferson County, where Birmingham, Bessemer, Pleasant Grove, Hueytown are located. So Bibb County, we're spending a little bit of time looking in Bibb County now. Again, it puts you between Amazon, between Mercedes. And there's a considerable amount of growth going on over in those areas. So some of our concentration has been going to those areas and looking around there.
Is there enough product out there for people to buy?
Far and few between. You're finding mobile homes, which, you know, I'm not opposed to owning a mobile home, whether I hold it for rental or turn around and resell. But no, you have to get into the smaller towns, Green Pine, West Blockton, some of those smaller towns. Now, you can find houses in those towns.
Is there any building going on out there? I mean, to support what they think is going to happen, people building homes yet?
You know, in the Vance area, which literally is right there by the Mercedes-Benz plant, there is new building going on there. And also, there's an area called Lakeview, which we have seen new developments being built and those houses actually selling for rental in those areas. And these are two-story homes. I've actually been asked by some of the investors to go look at them, and I've been in a couple of them out there. My guess is these are probably close to $200,000 homes is my guess. I don't really know the amount.
Interesting. Brian, let's talk a little bit about, I want to think about your turnkey, what you're doing with turnkeys, right? You mentioned you're doing flips. You're also doing turnkeys. Are these turnkeys, like I'm thinking your turnkeys are mainly in maybe the western, eastern part of town, like we talked about Eastlake, Inslee areas. And then
and that's where they are.
Tell me your definition of turnkey. And then really, when you're placing a tenant, what kind of tenant are you placing in there? Because we have a lot of listeners that are interested in Section 8. They ask us a lot of questions about Section 8, which we haven't touched on here. But and I know you've got a lot of experience with it, as we do too. So tell me a little bit about your turnkeys, like what you do to a house, and then who you place in that house.
So when we turnkey, we sell our turnkeys through a company based out of San Francisco. And we have to have $500 or less CapEx. So basically what they're telling us is they come in and inspect that home. And then if they give us, they line item, we want this corrected or this needs to be done. If it is over $500, we have to take care of that. We do take care of that. We take care of everything on that list, period. You know, we just do it. We want a clean inspection from this group. Basically, that house, when I think of a turnkey, it's got a new roof. Normally, it's gone down to the decking. So there's a new roof. HVAC system is brand new. We do an all-electric house. So we have to make sure we've got between 150 to 200 amp service on those houses. So if it's not there, we put in a new electrical service. Of course, outside's painted, inside's painted. Most of the time, we are gutting a bathroom, right, or both bathrooms. We are adding, we always try to add at least a half bathroom. Hardwoods are refinished, you know, new fixtures, new lighting fixtures, new plumbing fixtures. If it has copper water lines, we will save them. If not, we PEX all of that. And that is basically our turnkey product is what it is.
So I want to talk about a couple things he mentioned just to clarify for everybody. The company he's mentioning is Roofstock out of San Francisco. Mm-hmm. They're actually out of Oakland, but out of that kind of Northern California area. And there's a lot of turnkey providers that are turning to them to sell product. And we're actually going to have them on the show one of our next few episodes to talk about turnkey and selling through their platform. The other thing I think is important, because this is something that's very important to our residents, is an all-electric house. So let's talk about that a little bit, Brian. Why would a tenant or a resident want an all-electric house?
I would tell you your Section 8 tenant is looking at it just due to the fact that there is something about gas that they do not like. We like providing that service because it gives them just two bills. It gives them a power bill, gives them a water bill. That's all they've got.
There's something about adding another service provider that it feels like you're paying more money, even though maybe you're not right, technically paying more money, that our residents do not like.
Yeah.
Especially in those kind of lower to moderate income areas.
Correct. That's correct.
But all electric house doesn't just mean all electric, because we've run into this problem in the past where people will install the wrong type of all electric. So talk a little bit about a heat pump versus strip heat.
We put a heat pump in with backup strip heat. So when it gets below, I think it's 30 degrees, you have a heat pump, which is you have to have the furnace and you have to have the outside unit, or it depends. You know, it could be a package unit. Both of those are running. So your condensing unit is running even in the wintertime. It reverses itself is what it does in comparison to summer months. And up until around 30 or 32 degrees, it heats your house perfectly, but it's not efficient enough to heat. So we put in either a 10 kW or a 15 kW heat strip, depending on the size of the house. Well, that heat strip is just that. I mean, it literally, this thing just heats up. It's as red as it can be, glowing red as it can be. And in so doing that, that air flows over it and gives that house that little bit of extra that it needs.
If you're from up north, you don't know that this heat pumps exist. Everybody from the south, kind of down through Florida, heat pumps are very popular just because it doesn't get so cold. So the north heats with mostly gas. We're kind of on the line, right? We're kind of, if you go to Nashville, it's almost too far north to run right. a heat pump. Yeah. But in Birmingham, Alabama, it stays warm enough mostly to do that. So what happens is this heat pump runs and then it switches over to an emergency backup strip heat when it gets down to a certain level. If it can't keep up and keep the house heated, it basically flips over to an emergency situation and does keep it. But the problem with it is a lot of people will go install just strip heat, which is still all electric, but strip heat sucks a lot of energy. So we would have residents that if a investor installed just strip heat, we'd have residents coming to us in the winter months with $500 to $800 power bills. And obviously if you're living on a fixed income, that's not something you can afford to do. But for the investor, it was cheaper for him or her to install it. So you don't want to save a buck and then end up hurting yourself, because these residents do not stay in homes when their power bill is $500 to $800. Yeah. I mean, the first thing they do is try to get out of that house. So one of the things about investing in rental is you want people to stay for a long time. So spending the money, doing it the right way on the front end, and buying from a turnkey provider that has done it correctly on the front end is super important. So that's one thing I would definitely look at, looking to buy turnkey.
Like, I'll never forget the day that I had a tenant come and knock on our door. I thought I got a great price on a new
unit.
You
did get a great price, but there was a reason for it.
I got a great price. And then the tenant came, knocked on the door, and was like, "Hey, I'm not paying this $800 power bill." And I was like, "Yikes." So we ended up having to replace the whole unit. Okay, so you're selling through roof stocks. You're providing a great product. And then you're going out, and are most of your tenants Section 8? Are they private pay? What are your tenants?
Most of our tenants own the western part of town, which is what I call, what I would say is true West End and Inslee. All of them are Section 8. We pretty much get phone calls weekly, you know, depending on the product you put out. You know, word kind of gets around to some degree, and mainly gets around through the inspectors that inspect, the Section 8 inspectors. Yeah. And so we do not have a problem renting a house. That's not a problem for us.
Let's talk about the Section 8 program.
Well, listen, here's you a prime example with Section 8. And again, I love it. I personally own one Section 8 property right now. If there's a problem with it, here's the problem with it. Of course, this is kind of a new world we're in at the moment. I have a two-bedroom Section 8 house I get $775 a month rent out of. Of that $775, about $225 of it is paid by Section 8. The other $550 is paid by the tenant. She lost her job 2 weeks ago, and she cannot pay. So, you know, there's a process that we'll go through now to hopefully, it may be another month, it may be 2 months, but at some point in time, I should get reimbursed for her losing her job. But, you just have to take that into consideration. Now, the beautiful part of it, if you have a Section 8 tenant and that all of the rent is paid through Section 8, well, that check's going to hit at the first of every month.
Yeah, so Section 8 is a government subsidized program, and basically people have to apply and be accepted into the program. But some of the misconceptions, which Brian was just mentioning, is not every resident gets 100% of their rent paid by Section 8. It sometimes is a portion based on the amount of money they make, which is called affordability. They try to make the house affordable for people. It does create some other issues, because you've got to go through an inspection, which is
once a year,
right before you move in, and then on an annual basis. And those inspectors are basically constantly bringing that house up to a certain standard, mm-hmm. living standard. So some people like it. Some people like the fact that they essentially get a free independent set of eyes to look at the home. and that for a safety, they come in on an annual basis. Now, it is going to increase your expenses because a lot of that's deferred maintenance that a private pay resident probably would not do or not call in, right? So there's some benefits, and then there's some things you're going to give up when you use a Section 8 resident.
Well, they live in the house more, right? So they're typically, like, if they don't have a full-time job, then they're going to live in that house and flush more commodes, flip more light switches. They are going to use that house more. So you might have more repair and maintenance. Man, I had a great tenant, Brian. You probably remember this tenant. It was in Midfield, and she was on the Section 8 program, $740 a month or something is what we got. She paid almost nothing at the very beginning, but then as the years went on, they paid less and she paid more as she, you know, she got a job, she earned more money, and eventually she was like paying 95% of it, which is the way the program is supposed to work.
That's right.
Yeah, the thing I think people need to understand about Section 8, because we get a lot of questions when you decide if you're going to rent, like, you can't just, especially in some of these low-income areas of Birmingham, you can't just say, I'm not going to rent Section 8. You're essentially disqualifying
right
as much as half of your potential market to rent that house to, maybe more in some areas. But you also need to know that Section 8, the residents are no different than a private pay resident, because you've got to find good Section 8 residents to live in your home. And so GK Houses, we also qualify them. That we don't do a income qualification, but we do have to qualify them before they come move into one of our homes, because we want to still make sure that they're a good tenant. Like, just because they're on the program, just because they get this money subsidized from the government, does not mean that they're great housekeepers or that they aren't, you know, getting into trouble. So very important to, again, screen residents and make sure whoever's managing those homes are screening your residents before they move in.
You know, one of the things that I would tell any investor to do is find someone at least once a year, whether it's Section 8 or not, preferably more than that, and have your home inspected. You know, have somebody go through that home and, you know, one, if you've got a leaking roof and a tenant's not reaching out to you or whatever it may be, gutters. I know in a lease, you know, we'll put in there for the tenant's responsible for gutters. Well, most of your tenants may not even own a ladder. I don't know. But I mean, it's an asset. You've got to take care of that asset.
Yeah. If you aren't focused on what's going on out there, then small problems are going to turn into big problems. The proverbial leaking toilet at the base, that if you catch it early, then it's just a wax ring replacement.
Sure.
If you catch it too late, it's a whole rip out the floor in the bathroom, replace the subfloor, a bigger problem. And that goes for soffits and fascia. So having your house at least looked at on a regular basis is definitely worth it. And at GK Houses, we have annual and biannual kind of walkthroughs of the home, take pictures and do some of that. So for our investors, they really enjoy the peace of mind of getting to at least lay eyes on their home. If they don't live in the market, being able to see that on a regular basis.
All right. Well, Brian, anything else you want to add about Birmingham? Like, if there was one piece of advice you would give an investor, let's say they're listening, they live in New York, California, Florida, anything you would say?
I will just go back to what was said earlier. Come see the city. Come see where you're going to buy. That, to me, is so important. You know, a lot of these areas, and we've talked about a number of areas. However, a number of these areas, you literally may buy in a block that is a great block, but the next block may have some rough houses. One street over could be rough. Again, I don't see anything wrong with that. I just think you have to be comfortable with that. I don't want somebody buying a house next to one that's falling down. I don't want to see that. But again, a lot of these areas, even areas that we see a change taking place, there's still a lot of rough in these areas. So there's a long road ahead. A lot of houses to be purchased and rehabbed.
So yep. There's a lot of opportunity here. That's exciting.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And I would say my piece of advice also is don't fall in love with any deal, right? So don't, if you see something, somebody's offering something, just take your time. You don't have to buy the very first one that you find. It's a process. So take, like Brian said, I think coming out here is a really important part of the whole process.
Well, Brian, thank you so much. Hey, it was good to catch up, and thanks so much for joining and being our first guest. I think a lot of people will learn a lot from your years of wisdom. And so thanks so much for being willing to be transparent about all of this.
Yeah, yep, thanks,
you're Brian. Welcome. Have a great day.
All right, that's it. Subscribe to our podcast. Anywhere you listen to podcasts, you can go on there and just subscribe. Make sure you don't miss any of our episodes. We're going to be bringing more people just like Brian on here, industry experts, to talk about the Birmingham real estate market. So don't miss it.